Hey veterans, I wanted to leave a quick call out before today's show, which is about a company whose mission is to prosecute and pursue child predators. There's a way you can help today, and it really is as simple as posting on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. I've got templates ready for you to use on the website in the show notes, and would appreciate your taking a few minutes to play a part in supporting the Guardian Group and putting an end to this horrible practice. Thanks, and enjoy today's show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 71 with Jeff Teagues.
I don't think it's easy for people to recognize what their calling is. One, you really have to listen. And sometimes you get pulled into things that you weren't ready for. You know, my wife and I did not plan on leaving a very difficult life as a counterterrorism family to pursue this and to dig into this really vile crime. You know, we thought that we were going to retire in the mountains and kind of gallop off into the sunset and work leadership issues and things like that. And as I got more called to this problem set, there's a certain a bit of duty and obedience that you have to kind of walk through. And sometimes that can be difficult.
Top three reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, experience. Jeff joined the Army when he was just 17 years old and served with Army Special Operations for 25 years. He's one of the few people I've had on the show who transitioned into a career that puts these exact same skills to use, but in the civilian sector, and it's an incredible story. Number two, doing good. Jeff is one of the few people I've met in my life where it seems like he has a calling rather than a career. I'm inspired by how he followed that calling, even though it wasn't what he thought he wanted to do after the military. He is putting his skills to use in a way that is clearly making the world a better place, and it's really inspiring. Number three, Second Revolution. Jeff talks about World War II's impact on world and the veterans leading a revolution that started more and more small businesses. He talks about how today is following a similar trend, and I found it very energizing. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss. You'll also find a link to Jeff's company, The Guardian Group, where you can find out more, volunteer to help, or even donate to support their cause. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Jeff Teagues. Well, joining me today in Bend, Oregon is Jeff Teagues. Jeff, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
So Jeff has an awesome background. He is a counterterrorism and counterinsurgency expert with over 25 years in U.S. Army Special Operations. His combat experience includes operations around the globe to include multiple tours in Afghanistan and in Iraq. He is applying this expertise to counter-trafficking in the United States and is the chief operating officer for the Guardian Group. Guardian Group is the nonprofit that works with law enforcement to illuminate, disrupt, to prosecute, and relentlessly pursue child predators. And after his transition from the Army, he attended Breakline Education, which we talked about in episode 54 with Bethany Coates. And Bethany could not speak higher praise of Jeff. So really happy to have him on the show. I know that he is passionate about what he does with Guardian Group and also passionate about helping veterans. So, yeah. So Jeff, I always like to start off by just learning about your decision, you know, the point at which you knew you were going to leave the Army and how you approached that decision.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. It's kind of a gradual process, you know. Let me take you back even further. When I entered the military, I entered the military at 17 years old, straight out of high school, back in 1987. And I really was doing it for an adventure. And as I learned more and more about the mission, you know, like what Rangers were, what special forces were, what these special mission units were in the military, I really got hooked. So I ended up making it a career. And again, it kind of was a gradual process. I didn't recognize it as a career, you know, until I'm kind of older and settled and we've got kids and I'm now a major in the United States Army. And I, as the wars kicked off, and I got more and more involved with these techniques of counter network operations, we call them. We call it a manhunting methodology. You know, how we really were working to dismantle high-level Al-Qaeda, high-value targeting, you know, working through the counterinsurgency pieces and how do you blend counterterrorism with the U.S. strategy of counterinsurgency. I began to learn a lot of things that I really enjoyed and I really recognized that it's what made me tick. Well, as I got higher in rank and you move away from those kind of applied skills and you get almost an executive level position in the military, it not only became less interesting to me, but I also felt like I was less prepared to sacrifice what it took with that timing with my boys and with my wife. I looked to see what I really felt my passion and purpose was, and I began to feel a bit of a call and a pull to address this problem of trafficking. And the hypothesis was what I had learned over a couple decades of counterterrorism and counterinsurgency would be applicable. And to my surprise, over the last couple of years of staring at this problem and the last year of really, really digging into this problem, it is unbelievably similar.
You know, that's it's really incredible to hear that. And it's so funny. I take notes during these interviews to just try and just remember what the highlights are. So when I record the intro, I can say, hey, these are the three reasons to listen. And as you were talking, I was just literally wrote the word, like, this is this man's calling. And you said, like, 2 seconds later, you said, this is a calling. And it I don't know where that it comes from, the background I read, and it comes through your voice when you're talking about this. But I think there's very few people I know that have found a job that seems like their calling, that seems like their purpose. And it's just so exciting to hear, and I am so excited to hear more about this, but just to hear that the work that you're doing that is doing so much good in the world is really a calling, and that's very powerful.
Well, it's motivating, you know, and it's not, I don't think it's easy for people to recognize what their calling is. One, you really have to listen. And sometimes you get pulled into things that you weren't ready for. You know, my wife and I did not plan on leaving a very difficult life as a counterterrorism family to pursue this and to dig into this really vile crime. You know, we thought that we were going to retire in the mountains and kind of gallop off into the sunset and work leadership issues and things like that. And as I got more called to this problem set, there's a certain a bit of duty and obedience that you have to kind of walk through, and sometimes that can be difficult.
And I'm curious, when you left the Army, what led you to Breakline, and what was that experience like?
Well, when I went to the Naval War College, so in an officer's career, you end up at some point having the option to go get your master's degree, and there's a bunch of different places that you can go. And one of the things that I realized in the military, what we don't do well is aligning ourselves with academia and with media. You know, we live in this bubble, and sometimes we're often too happy in this bubble. But there's a lot of talent out there in the academic world. There's a lot of talent out there in the private sector. There's a lot of talent that is out there in the media. And to harness all of these different energies and all these capabilities is something that we just aren't doing well as a nation. So I recognized that early on. And so when I was looking to move on from the military, I really looked for organizations that were providing that space for us to partner. And then I had some friends out there at Stanford and that had introduced me to Bethany and had absolutely glowing remarks and comments on Bethany and what she was doing to try to facilitate this transition for military into the tech world, into the corporate world, was right up my alley. And then as I got involved with Guardian Group, and we were beginning to look at this as a nonprofit, which is still a business, I wanted to make sure that the things that I had self-taught and self-learned through reading, I was close enough to understanding business to not do harm. And Breakline was an incredible opportunity to meet people, to kind of bridge that gap, even just with the vernacular of what it's like to be in the military with what the civilian world is. And I think we still have a long ways to go to blend all of these communities to really tackle some tough problems across the United States and the globe.
And what was that starting point? So you joined Guardian Group, what, maybe a year or two after they started? I'm wondering, like, how did that connection happen? And how did you think about actually joining them?
Well, again, when you talk about a calling, it never happens overnight. So about 4 years ago, I met Jeff Keith, who was the founder of Guardian Group. And it was at a friend of ours' retirement. And it was in North Carolina. We were down at Fort Bragg. And I met Jeff, and we began to talk about what he was doing and what I wanted to do. I was already looking towards this cause in the future. And he had built something that was very fundamental. It was those relationships. It was this group of task forces in Central Oregon partnered with law enforcement and district attorneys and all of the support network. And what I was bringing to it was the pursuit side. How do we then activate more than just awareness, more than what they call the four P's: prevention, protection, prosecution, and partnership. That's kind of the four pillars of anti-trafficking. But to add that fifth P of pursuit and to turn it from anti-trafficking to counter-trafficking, and we decided to partner up. And then it just so happened he lived in a beautiful town, which matched the goals of my wife and I with finishing to raise our boys in Bend, Oregon. So this is where our headquarters is, and we partnered up. It's Guardian Group has been around for about 5 years, but we've really only been around for a year-ish in this very specific niche spot where we partner with law enforcement to help them kind of develop an offense to counter this crime.
And I know I gave like a very abbreviated overview of Guardian Group at the start. What would you want listeners to know? I mean, I'd love to hear more about your mission and the work that you're doing.
Well, there's a couple things. And when you did highlight it, those words, illuminate and disrupt, deter, those are all very military type terms that some of your listeners are going to resonate with. I guess really one of the pillars of Guardian Group is we are founded, operated, managed, and designed to employ veterans. So this is a model of ours. So in addition to our passion to really get after this problem of trafficking and protect the children in the United States, we're really looking to build opportunities and apply the capabilities, help veterans find that purpose and passion in life outside of the uniform, as is the name of your podcast, Beyond the Uniform. What is it that we do? And there's so many of us, men and women from the special operations community, that have really honed some really particular skills that can be applied to this problem set. And it's a unique situation because we're not an awareness raising group. There are a lot of groups that do that, and they do it well. And we're also not an aftercare facility. That isn't who we are. We're not counselors. We aren't the social workers. We are partnered with both ends of that spectrum. And we have very strong partnerships. So when we work with law enforcement and we're able to recover some girls or boys, we have that aftercare to put them into. It isn't through Guardian Group, but it's through our partnerships. So really, with our unique capabilities, we work side by side and more often than not behind the scenes with law enforcement and district attorneys to help them get after this crime. Because once the girls and boys are being trafficked and they're under the control of these pimps and traffickers, it's very, very difficult to get them back to a normalcy, a semblance of life. So you've got to interdict this crime early, like terrorism. It's too late when the Twin Towers come down. You've got to see the writing on the wall. You've got to see these clues. And the interesting thing about trafficking is there's a very public presence of this crime because it's advertised. It's on escort sites. They sell boys and girls very much in the open that you and I can see every day. It doesn't require some very sophisticated access to the deep and dark web. While it exists there, the predominance that we see is just very, very open on the surface. We're just not looking appropriately.
That's really incredible. You know, I think one thing that jumps out at me is that so many veterans that I've interviewed so far talk about one of the most jarring aspects of their transition to civilian life is issues around identity and issues around feeling like contribution and making a difference in the world. And also, you know, a lot of people I speak with, they take on roles that are very different than what they did in the military. And what I love is that it seems like you have found something that is equally as purpose-driven, equally as rewarding and fulfilling for you, and it heavily utilizes your training in the Army. And I think that's just a really cool blend to see that I haven't seen a lot of in these interviews?
Well, and Justin, I don't think we've done a really good job in the military to prepare folks with opportunities on the outside. So, you know, the units that I go through, from Rangers into Special Forces and then higher into U.S. Army Special Operations Command special units, there's an assessment program. There is a tryout. You know, you are just examined up one side and down the other, and you are trained, you know, and you are selected and you are integrated into this team. And then too often than not, when your time comes to retire or just leave service, they basically say thank you and they move on. And we haven't really created a space for men and women beyond the uniform to really apply those skills. So I take that seriously, and many of us do. You know, it's interesting. Just a couple days ago, a friend of mine, we were talking, and he commented on something that I think is very true. He said, at the end of World War II, we had this giant group of veterans that came back, and they literally saved the world. And they came back, and they wanted to apply that sacrifice to better our nation. And they did it in many different ways, but a lot of it was small business. And I didn't really dawn on me until he said this, that I think this is what we're seeing. We're seeing a second revolution. Now, we did not save the world in the way that our World War II veterans did, but we've got hundreds of thousands of men and women who did our part. And maybe we weren't saving the world, but we believed in our cause, and we believed in pushing freedom and opportunity across the globe. And now we're coming home to America after a decade or more of pouring our energies all across the world, predominantly into the Middle East, and we're ready to tackle some of the problems in the U.S. And it isn't going to be through more federal initiatives. It's not going to be through these giant campaigns that are top-down driven. It's going to be grassroots, small business ideas and initiatives and people partnering together to just take responsibility for what's happening in our country. And it just so happens my passion is trafficking, and the people that I'm partnering with and pulling into our community is about trafficking. But you can apply this methodology to just about any of the ails that we're continuing to work through as a nation.
I really appreciate you brought that up, and it's so crazy because I'm trying to think of where I'd heard that same stat recently too, of just the impact of how when veterans came back from World War II, how many of them started companies. And just I know how many veterans today have that entrepreneurial drive, and I love that you call that second revolution, that this is a time for those veterans to funnel their skill and determination and talent and integrity into making the world a better place. And also what I love about what you've said is that this is not, I think that anyone, veteran or not, they are more successful if they find something that just lights them up. And, you know, it just makes you, that's the reason why when I came from the Naval Academy, I did not become a pilot, because I'm like, yeah, sure, I would fly, but I would be competing against people that have wanted to fly since they were like 7 years old. And no way am I going to ever put myself in that competitive set, because if someone's that passionate, they are going to be better. And, you know, you have found something that's passionate, and that's going to make you happier, and it's going to make you so much more useful in making a high impact on the world. And so what I like about what you're saying is for those veterans who want to make the world a better place, they can do it. And it doesn't have to be something artificial. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm going to start an orphanage, you know, unless that's something that you're passionate about. But you can find there are so many things I'm sure vets are passionate about that would also make the world a better place and would probably also make them a living and allow them to employ other people and boost the economy. And so, yeah, so much of what you said resonates with me.
Yeah. You know, in the community we come from, you know, we're driven by task and purpose, by mission and vision. You know, we aren't driven, many of us, by capitalism or power or stature. You know, it's just ingrained in us early on to get to work as a team and accomplish the mission. And that's really what we're trying to do with Guardian Group. And that's one of the things that was interesting. You know, I thought going into this that the hard part was going to be getting the buy-in from district attorneys and law enforcement on how does this work exactly, where a private company, a nonprofit, partners with us without any real authorities, et cetera, et cetera. I thought that was going to be the hard sell. And the easy sell was going to be to get the community support and the corporate support and the donors and the funding. And it's actually been the opposite. We have more work than we can actually get to because we just don't have the funding. And that is one of the reasons why, you know, with January recognized as National Human Trafficking Awareness Month, we're really trying to get the word out. And it's a difficult word to get out because there's a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to trafficking, even the words that we use. You know, there's the initially people think of the Taken scenario with Liam Neeson, you know, Eastern Europeans stealing your children from your house. And it really isn't that. It's even more diabolical than that. It's these predators out there that are literally hunting our children and looking for their vulnerabilities and exploiting those vulnerabilities. And it's going to take our community to just recognize it and then put the resources into play where folks coming out of the military, folks coming out of special operations in the intelligence communities, the operations communities, and even these enablers and supporters to partner with law enforcement to get ahead of this crime. And again, this is a methodology that we're applying to trafficking, but pick a problem. It's a methodology that will work, but it's going to require us to re-look America and our communities and take responsibility for what's happening around us.
That's awesome. And I also want to make sure that listeners get a taste of what your life is like, particularly for those who are interested in this sort of work. And so I'm wondering if you could kind of paint the picture of what your day-to-day life looks like at work. And that can be as granular as you want, you know, the hours you're in and out and like the activities you do, the team size you work with, whether you work on weekends and travel a lot, just whatever would help them better understand your life.
Sure. I think one of the easiest ways to break it down too is we have an offense and a defense. So when we talk about Guardian Group, we have two identities there. One is Guardian Group itself, and then nested within Guardian Group is what we call pursuit and enablement. The other side of that is the professional development and professional education. So those are the two sides, the two lines of effort that we focus on. And I try to balance my time with those. Jeff, the CEO of Guardian Group, works much more with the professional development side, and I work on the enablement side. So we balance our time with trying to meet with folks that will continue to support Guardian Group, because that's our number one weakness right now is just enough dollars to have people doing this full time. All of us have a second job to make things to make ends meet, and it pains me every day, every week that I have to work some other job to support really the passion of Guardian Group. Things fall through the cracks. So part of it is working to get that corporate support. It's meetings all over the country. We're focused predominantly on the West Coast right now just because of geography, the I-5 corridor. So we're building a headquarters in Bend. We're trying to build regional operating centers as we're partnering operators and intel analysts with different law enforcement agencies in demographic areas across the country. We're doing all that while we're continuing with operations and training. So one of the sayings I used to love in the military was we're building this airplane in flight. You know, so even when I go back to Breakline and the things, the books that I read and studied, the couple that really stuck with me was The Art of the Start and The $100 Startup. And those two books basically have the same concept, which is stop thinking about it, stop organizing it to the nth degree, and begin to act. And that's what we've done with Guardian Group. So as we continue to build and mature, we're conducting operations. And those operations look like law enforcement coming to us with gaps that they need assistance on. We've got mothers and friends calling us and bringing cases to us with girls that have been kidnapped or disappeared or caught up into the lifestyle. We help generate leads in different counties and cities along the West Coast to help them proactively target the pimps and the traffickers and what we can see on the escort sites. So it cases come in and we pursue cases. And really it's balancing building this organization with having effective operations and trying to have those become complementary.
One thing I would love to know too is maybe someone listening is not interested in working with you guys, but I'm wondering, for myself, and I imagine other people listening that just get really fired up about this, like how can we support this? If someone was interested in donating or contributing in some way, where can we go for that?
Sure. You can go straight to our website. It's theguardiangroup.org. You can go onto our website and you can look at there's ways to donate there. We have Facebook pages. We have a presence on a lot of the social media. So I ask anybody who's even remotely interested to assist us with the financial support. If they can't assist with financial support, it's just continue to monitor what we're doing and repost the things that we're talking about. Like the things that we're talking about, talk to your friends, talk to people that might have that influence or that significant ability to contribute. You know, it's taken me a while. It's been a little over a year now since I retired, and it's taken me a while to feel comfortable asking for money. It's just not something I've ever done, you know, and we really try to harness these teams and harness these volunteers. But, you know, Justin, it just comes down to that. We are a professional organization of that understand intelligence analysis and operations and training and how to apply the skills we've learned in law enforcement. And it's what many of us want to do beyond the uniform. And it really is developing enough pattern of income that we can hire folks full time. And I've got literally a dozen men and women from the special operations community just standing by for us to employ. So I still find it uncomfortable to ask for people's financial support, but that really is what we need. And I can also guarantee you, whatever comes our way is going directly into operations and employing veterans to apply their skills. You know, there's a lot of organizations out there also that support veterans, and some veterans, they need a vacation. You know, they need a vacation for their wives. You know, they need a helping hand, but most of us need to be able to follow our purpose and passion. So I really emphasize that side of it, not only for the trafficking victims and the girls and boys that continue to be abused and that continue to fall through the cracks because we just don't have the time to really devote to pulling them out of the problem, to making sure that these pimps and traffickers are prosecuted to the full extent of the law. We're really looking for getting those guys full time.
That's great. And you know, if we were playing Family Feud, the number two or maybe number three answer for things that veterans complain about most in these interviews is asking for help. Or, another episode I would recommend to listeners is my interview with Emily in episode 70. She runs an organization called New Politic and helps veterans on both sides of the aisle get into politics, and we have an extensive conversation in that about how it is so difficult for vets to ask for money. It's like the epitome of asking for help, and then yet this is such a worthwhile cause. And so it's interesting to hear how that's been your challenge as well, and how it sounds like the driving force of something you believe in so deeply has helped get past that hurdle that I know many, many veterans share. And for listeners, in the show notes, I'll put links to the Guardian Group website and their Facebook pages. And I definitely will make a donation after this. I would encourage anyone listening to do the same. And I know that money will be put to good use. And it's just very rarely that you can put money to use in a way that it helps vets, it's employing vets, it's helping people who are suffering, it's helping to, you know, reward an organization that's doing good in the world. And this is one that just hits on so many different things. So I would encourage anyone listening to click on that link in the show notes and to find a way, even if it's just a small $20, you know, you can go without two or three beers for a day or two, and that money would be put to better use.
Well, Justin, thank you for that. And let me just tell you a short vignette, because that's the other thing I want to emphasize.
Yeah.
With the money too, it's not for me, man, and it really isn't for Guardian Group. You know, everything we do is for these victims. So I'm going to call this girl Emily. Okay, so we partner with law enforcement, and we were on the offense, and we developed some leads. What we were able to see from these different escort ads that were out there, and we We first looked and tried to identify who we thought might have been a minor under 18, who would seem by the indicators in their ads, who was really being exploited by these by a pimp or trafficker. And we were very intentional about who we helped develop this sting against. And as luck would have it, and the analytical work that we did, everything came into play, and we were able to rescue two girls. They were not minors. One was 18 and one was 19. Both of which had been trafficked since they were 12 or 13 years old, which is about the average age of entry into the sex trade. And we were also able to arrest at the time a primary pimp trafficker and then another pimp who was an enabler. Now, Justin, both of these men had committed murder over time, and they did some pretty short sentences. So these were very violent men. And what is very odd is when we were able to arrest the pimps and pull these girls out of this problem, they were both ready to start their lives anew. And they were both ready to get out of the game and to begin to press charges against these pimps. Well, this is where the story goes in that gap that's frustrating. Well, in the week that followed, we got Emily a job. We got them on their way to restoration and rehabilitation. And we had to follow other meetings to look for donors to continue to support Guardian Group. And suddenly Emily disappears. She's at a job for a week or two and she disappears and we can't find her. So we go back to the open source on the internet and what we're seeing, and she's back in the game. And we continue to work the case, and we find that her pimp, her trafficker from jail, was able to reach her and contact her and threatened her and demanded that she return to prostituting, and she continued to fund him while in prison. And it was simply that gap in time that we were not able to continue to stare at this problem, that these calls coming out of jail, the mail coming out of jail, we didn't have time to monitor. We didn't have time to identify with Emily what it was she was feeling and to give her that level of protection that she needed. And we lost her, and she's still out there. She's for sale today. And the second pimp, again, basically didn't have the time to assist the DA and assist law enforcement to really develop a strong, solid case against this individual. He's on the street and he's running girls and he's recruiting girls and he's luring them in and he's breaking them and he's employing them. And the pimp trafficker that was picked up in this particular case is going to end up doing about 2 years, and he's right back out. So I'm not trying to be doom and gloom. I'm just trying to help folks identify we're doing a great job. Law enforcement is doing a great job, the best that they can do with the resources available. But to really have professionals that this is all we do, this is all we stare at. I don't deal with jaywalking. You know, we don't deal with bank robberies. We deal with trafficking, and we're here to protect our children. And every time we have to take our eye off the ball for whatever reason, sadly, one of these boys and girls just slips through the cracks. So that's where their money's going to go.
That's absolutely incredible. And you know, I'm wondering for listeners who are interested in applying to Guardian Group or maybe just working in this space in general, I'm just wondering any advice you would have to them about either indications that they might be really well suited for this, or advice on how to join an organization like this or get through the application process.
Yeah, people have to be real self-critical or understanding of where their gifts are. So when it comes to Guardian Group, specifically Guardian Group, we have a pretty niche approach, and we're drawing almost exclusively from the military community, and even more exclusively than that from special operations and folks that have been doing counterterrorism overseas. So we have a very, very niche capability, but we're always looking for those partners on both sides of where our niche capability ends and theirs picks up. And part of that is in the prevention side of it, you know, getting out there to schools and hospitals and providing this education, you know, and then the backside of it too is the restoration and the rehabilitation. Anybody can download our ebook. Anybody can apply for what we have is the Guardian Blue Seal. So we have a couple campaigns. One is the Blue Seal that's raises awareness for anybody, and they can demonstrate their support for this cause of counter trafficking. And we've also developed the Silver Seal, which is an online training course that we market specifically to hotels now. Because our vision is that hotels through the next few years are trained to recognize indicators of trafficking. And when we have hundreds and thousands of hotels and those hotel staff that can recognize indicators of trafficking, and Guardian Group provides them a reporting mechanism, so not only do they see what they think they may see, they can report it, and we've got the analytical support to cross-reference what they think they're seeing and push that information to law enforcement. So we're trying to build out these communities. So that isn't just for hotels, even though they're our step one focus. It's the transportation industry, it's corporate industry, and where this intersects with your life the most for everyone, to include you, Justin, is when you travel. You're going to begin to see this. Now that we've had this discussion, when you travel, you're going to see this. You're going to see this at airlines. You're going to see this at taxi stops. You're going to see this at bus stops. You're going to see this at Uber and Airbnb, and very specifically at hotels. And we've got to build a campaign, not just for awareness, but recognition and response. And that's the effort that Guardian Group is trying to push across our country. And I think that's a space where every citizen can get involved.
That's great. I mean, what I also love, you know, I guess two things I'd point out for listeners is I spoke about in a previous interview with with Michael Bradley. I think it's a very recent episode about how important it is when you're networking for a job or anything like that to have very specific and actionable asks, because people want to help and they want to be able to contribute. And so one of the things I just wanted to highlight from what you just said is I think it's such a beautiful way of showing all the different ways. Like, there's not a single listener who, based on what you said, cannot take action today to support a really great organization. And that could be by applying to work at Guardian Group. That could be by donating to support them. It could be by, if you know someone in the travel space, in the hospitality space, letting them know about the Silver Seal and how they can be certified and how the big dramatic impact it would have. And then just even on a citizen level of just being aware of this problem and being alert and paying attention for it. So I love both the message of what you're saying, but I also just wanted to highlight what a great example this is for vets of when you're passionate about something and you know you're making a difference, be willing and ready to ask for that support. Cause I think you'll find that people will follow through on that.
And Justin, I'm going to highlight one of the things you commented on there. There's support in our communities. There's support with the power of people, and that's the one of the visions we're trying to get to, is that the citizens demand that our hotels are trained to recognize and deter and disrupt this crime. That our corporations are training their employees when they travel to not engage in this type of crime, you know. So there is a power to the public, and that is one of our dreams over time, is that when you're getting on Travelocity or whatever site you're getting on, and you're choosing a hotel or you're choosing a transportation company, that this becomes part of your decision-making process. Are they trained by a Guardian Group? Are they recognizing and acknowledging how they're complicit in the need to deter and disrupt this crime? And we have a loud voice as consumers. So I would challenge people on that too. Ask hotels, ask hotel staff, ask corporations, have you heard about Guardian Group? Have you heard about what you can do to deter this crime and safeguard our children? And there is a move afoot in the nation already. This idea of trafficking as a form of slavery, as a form of abuse, it's on the move, and states are tackling it, counties are tackling it, the federal government is beginning to tackle it even more, but it's really going to be pushed forward as the consumers, as the citizens demand that we take a stand. And we haven't even touched on, you know, the depth of this crime, you know, and I don't even want to end on that note. It's just incredibly exploitive and manipulative and harmful to our youth. And we've got to attack it from the demand side. We've got to attack it from the supply side. And that's where everyone in the community can really raise their voice.
That's great. What is the most challenging part of your job?
I think it comes down to what we talked about, and this might seem odd to people. It's asking for money. It's doing these meetings and being turned down with this cause. You know, I've been in and out of combat and conflicts, you know, most of my life. You know, my beginning in 1989 with Just Cause. So I can very much compartmentalize terror, warfare, crime, evil. You know, those things don't bother me. You know, I can turn those on and off in my brain and in my life. The things that keep me up at night is how are we going to continue to further this cause? How are we going to be able to support this? Who is that right guy or gal or corporation or grant, or where is this support that's just going to give us that final launch, that final tipping point to have to stop hustling and just really apply and develop our operations? I don't know if that sounds weird, but the grossness, the depth, the evil of this crime, it doesn't even bother me. I've lived with things like this. It's the frustration on having people just take that next step and trust us and get behind us and help us really fight this.
That's really powerful. You know, I know we're short on time. I always like to end on an open note, and I know that we've covered a lot of different things, and I'm also sure that there's a lot that I could have asked about that I didn't even know to ask about. And so I would just love to give you room to share any final words of wisdom on anything personal, professional, or anything that you think would be important for veteran listeners to hear.
Yeah, it's almost a highlight, Justin, of what we talked about. You know, the veterans out there, we've literally put our lives on the line to potentially sacrifice our lives to help other nations. And many of our men and women have given the ultimate sacrifice with their lives, with their limbs, and many of them continue to suffer. But I guarantee if they take the time to ponder and they take the time to really identify their passion, identify what they want their purpose to be in life, and listen for that call, they're going to see how their life through the service and in the military has prepared them for something on the outside. So I really encourage them to dig into that, to look into that. Any of these folks can feel free to reach out to me. We have an entire community. There's a lot of different organizations out there that are helping veterans. My passion is trafficking, and it's a no-brainer. What's happening out there in the U.S., this is not a crime isolated in Southeast Asia. This is not a crime isolated with terror organizations like ISIS. This is happening in America, and too many of our boys and girls are being trapped into this. So this is my purpose. This is my passion. I would love to enlist the support from every citizen in America and encourage every veteran to find theirs, because it's out there waiting for them. And there's plenty of us now beginning to build opportunity for them to find that.
That's great. And I know you had said it at the start of the interview where you talked about, you know, you found your calling because you had to listen. And that's something that's very top of mind for me as well. And, you know, there's that, I view it as this still small voice, like that tugging at your heart that you I think everyone can remember times when they felt, you know, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it gut feel. You can call it like Malcolm Gladwell calls it, like I think micro slicing, or he has some term for it. But you know, or you could even call it something greater of the universe or God or whatever you want to call it directing you. And I notice more and more that, like, to hear that, to like train yourself, like to condition yourself to listen and act on it. You can't. you can't be going at a million miles an hour all the time. You can't be constantly looking at your phone and just every second filling yourself with so much noise. You have to have some sort of stillness instilled in you so that when that tiny voice whispers and when that gentle nudge comes, you're sensitive enough to listen to it, and then you have the courage to actually act on it. Because I think that a lot of times when these things come, they're contrary to what we would do otherwise. They are outside of our zone of comfort, and that zone of discomfort is where all, I know for my life, that's where everything great has come from. Every great moment of growth has come from it. And I think of Jeff in your story. I mean, I can just imagine after decades of service to our country, you earned that right to go with your wife and to ride off into the sunset, as you said, and to just check out. And I imagine there must have been some conflict of just, man, I feel this calling, and I've just thought for so long of just finally being able to put up my spurs and just relax. And I just really appreciate, you know, that you had that courage to listen to that and that you act upon it. And I think it's not only making an impact, obviously, in the world and on veterans and on so many people, but I think it's such an inspirational role model for people listening, of someone who did develop that discipline and listened and had the courage to follow it. And I just, yeah, I really appreciate that.
Justin, thank you. And I really appreciate you giving us the platform to talk about this and share our passion. Share our passion to protect our children, bring this fight to trafficking, and how we're doing it through employing our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net or no extra time to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans. It can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyondtheuniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyondtheuniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.